line. This is thecommentary.ca. Alan Twigg joins me now. He is the author of a new book, Full Time, A Soccer Story. It's a memoir about his relationship with soccer, from playing it as a kid growing up here in Vancouver to watching World Cup games to the sport's history to the team he belongs to, made up of other 50-year-old and older fellows. A fifth-generation Vancouverite, Alan Twigg is the publisher of the indispensable BC Book World and has written 13 other books, including, if I turn around here and look, sitting on a shelf here behind me is his biography of Bill Vanderzamp. He's also received the Jack and Dora Shadbolt Fellowship at Simon Fraser University. Full Time is published by McClelland and Stewart and retails for $32.99. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Alan Twigg. Good morning, Mr. Twigg.
Good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Is that you on the cover there?
It is, and there's no photoshopping.
And that's an actual ball that...
I have to tell the guys on my team, there's a picture of me on the cover for your listeners there, where I'm heading a soccer ball in the air, and people think that there's a Photoshop or something, but no, it was a real picture.
And you still headbutt the ball? Is that what it's called?
Heading the ball?
Yeah,
sure.
Heading the ball?
Yes, I do.
And you had a brain tumor, what, 6 years ago?
2001.
Yeah. Is that the same thing? I mean, just thinking here, that's the same thing that Senator Kennedy has?
You know, believe it or not, a few days before I had my operation at VGH, there was an article on the front page of the Sun that said 1 in 5 Canadians is going to develop a tumor in the head.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fairly common thing.
And just about Senator Kennedy, and is, well, from what I read and what I see on television, his prognosis is grim. Yours, obviously, it turned out.
Mine's
well,
a good Pollyanna story. You know what? You can go into our incredible medical system here, have wonderful people look after you, and have a brilliant surgeon named Christopher Honey extract a very big brain tumor from your head and be out and about and be perfectly normal afterwards.
Now,
so people need to know that.
Do they advise that you head the ball?
No, they do not.
Why do you still
do it? They
do
not
it?
Say, and now... After you've got your brain tumor, go out and play soccer. No, they didn't say that.
But you still do it. Why?
Because I was prepared to die anyway. So, you know, one's life isn't, you know, the idea you're going to live to be 95 or something. You know, where do we get that idea from? So I wasn't that afraid of dying even when I had the operation. But... be yourself. I mean, what are you going to do? Just play it safe for the rest of your life? I mean, it's, my character is not that way. And so it was never really an issue.
And you played soccer nearly your whole life, correct?
I played quite avidly as a youth. But one of the things this book Full Time gets into is that I want to look at the culture of soccer in Canada. There's never been a serious book that a literary book that examines the game in a critical, introspective level. And I played seriously as a kid, but could have gone to Europe to play, but it was such a radical idea when I was a kid that this is pre-Whitecaps, that everybody just kind of quit playing when they were 16 or 17. So I stopped playing for two or three decades while I was raising a family and came back to the game after that.
Is yours a unique story in that sense that people give it up for a good number of years and then come back to it later?
No, because of our climate here in the West Coast, we have an extraordinarily active so-called seniors leagues. There are leagues in Vancouver and the Lower Mainland for, you know, over 30s, over 40s, over 50s, over 55s, and this is quite serious competitive soccer too. It's not what one would assume, sort of pathetic old guys. A lot of guys played really well. There's lots of players who played in Europe still playing here. So we have an extraordinarily fit athletic culture compared to most places in the world.
Well, when you said you had the opportunity to go to Europe as a teen, was that professionally?
No. When I was a kid?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I had a coach who wanted to send me to Germany. Because he thought I was had potential to play.
Well, when you talk about soccer being so unique, we always hear that soccer, you know, especially around talk about that in the book. It's not as prevalent, or is it?
Well, I think maybe we're on the cusp of the change. The Toronto FC franchises is actually doing extremely well, largely because of their avid fan base. And Montreal, I was at Montreal for the opening of the new Saputo Stadium, which is a soccer-designated stadium in Montreal. And so things are changing. If we can have a viable professional league or professional teams, that will change the climate quite a bit. There's always been more people playing soccer in Canada than playing hockey. That's been that way for quite a while. But people paying money to see soccer versus people paying money to see hockey is quite different. So I think that it's only going to improve on the professional level, and eventually we'll get a stadium in Vancouver too.
What about soccer in the United States? Has David Beckham done anything for the sport there?
You know, as I've gone into the book somewhat, I'm not a Beckham fan. I think that his foray, the LA Galaxy, playing one game last year is embarrassing. So I don't believe, even though he may get some publicity walking around an airport with posh spice, it's a bit of an insult to those many thousands or millions of people who actually appreciate the game, and that he was never that great to begin with, and now he's a bit over the hill. So the idea that you're going to dangle the viability of a league on a charismatic poster boy or post boy doesn't really sit very well with me.
In terms of, you rewrote two books, one on Cuba and one in Belize. You spent a lot of time there.
Mm-hmm.
What's their relationship with soccer, as opposed to ours, perhaps, if we can compare them two?
Well, in most places of the world, and you go, you realize how few fields they have. We're so field-rich that, you know, kids are playing on... In Belize, I mean, people running around barefoot on rocks playing, and... So the number of decent grass pitches that they have in Belize, they might have one. And Cuba is a little bit better, but still, the number of fields they have is minimal. And yet, these countries still have kids avidly playing the game. I think that Canada is, that I grew up in, was a soccer-poor country. Even though we had lots of fields, we didn't have access to an understanding of the game, the way that perhaps a lot of people in so-called poorer countries are actually living in soccer-rich countries.
And it's a game, I guess you did say, you know, you can play it barefoot or so on, and that's why kids in Canada play it more than hockey, is you don't need very much equipment, you don't need uniforms and that sort of stuff, do you?
It's cheap. And also, you don't have to get up and drive to the rink at 4:30 in the morning.
You belong to this team, the Point Grey Legends, correct?
Correct.
And in, I guess, a year ago,
we went to Spain in June of 2007,
and that's around the time of the birth of your first grandchild. Correct?
Yes, it was weirdly coincidental. My grandchild was born, a daughter, while I was in Spain playing.
And you talked about this in the book. It's a fascinating. Well, how did you end up? Like you say you quit playing soccer through the formative years of your life, and
right.
now in your 50s, you've taken it up again. Why did you take it up again?
Well, for one thing, I missed the camaraderie of being on a team. And I think in retrospect, you know, when you're raising a family, you sort of isolate yourself into a little sort of capitalist family unit, and you're struggling to keep that going and get your kids and worrying about all that stuff. And I realized I did miss that exciting group spontaneity of being on a team. And the chemistry of being on a team is always fascinating, and much of my book deals with that. And whether you're on a professional team at the highest level or an amateur team at the lowest level, the mix of psychology required to make a team is invariably fascinating. And amateurs can be just as passionate as professionals. So I think re-entering that climate of a team has been really an enriching experience for me, because uh, you you end up loving your teammates, even if you don't like them as characters off the street. Once you're on a team with people, you learn to love them. And so the reintegration into a team, I think, is part of it. The other thing is, you know, you're getting old and you're worried about fitness. And, you know, I can't stand jogging. And if I had to go to a gym, I'd shoot myself. So all I really know how to do is play team sports.
And the people that make up the team, are they like you, or are they writers, or are they from different walks of life?
Well, in fact, the team I play on is a little bit interesting, perhaps sociologically. It's a West Side team, so most of these guys, fairly outwardly, how should I say, successful. One guy works as the engineer at Triumph at UBC, and one guy's an emergency ward doctor, two doctors, lawyers, architects. So they're pretty, how should I say, they're mostly pretty smart guys. So it's been kind of fun to manage the team and to try and manage a bunch of guys. You know, they talk about old dogs and new tricks. So, you know, telling guys in their 50s who think they're fairly smart and fairly soccer intelligent, you know, where they're going to play and what they're supposed to do is a very interesting exercise, and it's actually kind of fun. So I think our team is an unusual one, because you got, you know, 14 guys who think they understand the game better than everybody else.
And who do you play against?
We play against teams around the Lower Mainland. A lot of the teams are made up in terms of their European origins. For instance, there's a team called Team Chile, mostly Latin American guys. Or there's a Croatian team, a team of Italian guys. Whereas ours is a truly Canadian team. We're from all over the place.
Your wife, how does she? Is she a soccer widow?
No, she isn't. I think that most of the wives, although they probably make jokes about their husbands running around with their tongues hanging out, I think on another level, they like it that their husbands are still fit enough to play serious soccer in their 50s, and they'd rather be married to that guy than a guy who sits on the sofa and gets a beer gut. So I think there's a level of that they approve of.
We're talking with Alan Twigg, wrote his book Full Time, A Soccer Story, $32.99 from McClelland and Stewart. So how did you end up in Spain, your whole team? Were you in some tournament or something like that?
Well, we've played, many teams nowadays travel around the world and play. It's a growing phenomenon. Unfortunately, it's not good for the environment, but nonetheless, especially older people who have some excess income, and the kids are grown up, etc., have the freedom to do these little forays. So what we did, I don't think, was particularly unusual. I hear about teams in various sports traveling all over the world. We had gone to France on several occasions. These are loose conglomerations of people. You sort of pick up a few guys who can go, and so you don't necessarily take your exact team. You just take a bunch of guys who are willing to go. And it's in the spirit of, you know, adventure and camaraderie and that kind of thing. So we had gone to France a few times and had extremely convivial gatherings with other French teams and really positive experiences. So we knew someone who knew a guy who basically has a team of ex-professionals in Spain. Some of these guys have played on the top first division teams in Spain, including Real Madrid. So we thought, okay, let's go play those guys and see if we can get a game against them, if we can have a sort of the median age of our team is 56 or 55. So why don't they put together a team of guys perhaps of comparable age group, and we'll have a game. And it was arranged about a year in advance.
And what do you think you learned from it?
We learned never to trust a Spanish bar owner named Miguel who promises to put on a team of equal-aged guys.
Reading the book, it seems you really enjoyed writing it. Did you?
I did, because I wrote it kind of as it was happening. I wanted to have that kind of energy of an athletic contest where you really don't know what's going to happen next. And so I didn't write it in retrospect. I wrote it as an ongoing adventure, and I think that gives it some kind of palpable passion that you wouldn't get if you let everything happen to you and then you did it in retrospect. And I wanted the book to have the feel of a novel, which it does, because things happen that you don't expect them to happen. And so I definitely wrote it as a journalistic exercise.
This is the 14th book, correct?
I think so, 13 or 14, something like that.
Did you write all the time?
How do you mean, when I was over there? Or?
I mean, like, do you always have a book on the go? It seems you do.
You know, when I was a kid, I just always was a writer, and so I always say to people, they ask me now, because I run BC Book World, you know, what should I do about becoming a writer and all that kind of stuff? And really, the answer is quite simple. You will become a writer if you can't not become a writer. So it's something, it's a gene, like playing the violin well, and you can't help it. So I've always been a writer. In terms of whether I've been always been writing books, not really, because I used to do a lot of sort of social service stuff, and it's only in the last, maybe 10 years or so that I've become more selfish and decided, you know, I should really devote more time to writing books than doing other stuff I do. And possibly, if you were looking for, you know, pseudo-psychological things, possibly the one of the many good things about that brain surgery was it possibly alerted me to the fact that time's a-wasting, and so I've been writing a lot more in the last 10 years than previous years.
And are you working on another book?
You know, I always literally say, you know, I'd be crazy to write another book, and I hope I don't. So the answer is I am not working on another book, although there's another bunch of books I know I could be doing, and there's a publisher who wants me to do one, but I'm enjoying this little fantasy of telling myself that I'm not going to write another book.
And BC Book World, that's as successful as it's ever been, hasn't it?
It's always remained remarkably stable, so it's myself and another person basically for 20 years, so it's how I make my living. And so the sky is always falling in the book industry, but somehow BC Book World endures, so I'll continue to do that as long as I can. I really appreciate being of service, and it's a way of educating people to what books exist, where they live, and I really appreciate being able to have that function.
It is a tremendous service, and I mean, highly readable. I mean, I whenever my mind comes to the door, I find that I spend, you know, a good hour or two going through it.
Well, that's good, because I try and, you know, I always fail at my goal of being middle brow, but that's what I'm trying to be. And that means the guys who are at the print shop when that paper is printed, if they're not picking it up and reading it and finding something in there for them, then I've failed. I always imagine my ideal reader is the guy who drives the Greyhound bus, or woman who drives the Greyhound bus, as it may be, on the BC ferries, and they pick it up because they're just trying to kill time. I don't want to have a publication for the literary aristocracy that tells other people how to think. So I want it to be accessible, and I don't want it to be condescending, which most book reviews periodicals, I think, are A, largely corrupt, but B, condescending. And I'm really not interested in telling people how to think. I just want them to get information.
As someone who's in the book market now as an author, and someone who's covered it, as you said, for 20 years, what is the state of books in Canada, books in BC, I guess?
Well, the box stores are slowly eliminating the incredible infrastructure of independence that we've had in BC for about 30 years is the big issue these days. It used to be able to go into any medium-sized town or large town in British Columbia and you'd find one good independently managed bookstore. So we actually were like the bastion, the last bastion, sort of like the Picts and the Scots or something in the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire just couldn't conquer everybody. And BC was out there in the fringes with our great librarians and booksellers functioning independently, and that system is being eroded, and so I would say the book industry in British Columbia possibly has passed through its golden era. It's a sobering idea, and people really don't like it when you say it, but that to me is what could be happening.
Well, congratulations on this book, Alan, and continued good luck with it, and I do appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about it.
Well, I really appreciate you being interested, and, you know, I think it's true to say Full-Time is the first serious book about Canadian soccer, which is bizarre. When you think of all the hockey books that are out there, other than all these books that teach kids how to take a throw-in, the silent soccer majority out there should have a book, so I've just tried to write one that everybody would like to read.
And you have. I'm not a soccer fan and don't purport to being one or watching it on television at all, but I guess because you tell your story, it makes it all the more accessible.
Good, yeah. There's lots of levels happening in there. It's not just about a team of 50-year-olds. That's just one of the storylines. So it's the one that people hook onto, but the book is really about soccer itself and the game and the nature of athletics.
The book is called Full-Time, A Soccer Story, $32.99 from McClelland and Stewart. AlanTwig.com is the website. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Plunta.